Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Paul Reed-Smith and the Maryland Hall team are offering a live virtual 4-day music camp from August 10th to 13th, 2020. Open to musicians and enthusiasts of all ages, be ready for a fun experience of learning music with the greats, all from the comfort of your own home. The school's teachers are top professional musicians, to include renowned guitar maker Paul Reed-Smith, legendary drummer Dennis Chambers, YouTube guitar teaching experts Tim Pierce and Tyler Larson, along with session directors Gary and Greg Granger, known worldwide as the Granger Brothers, as well as some of Maryland's best. Tuition is $100 per person for all 4 days of all masterclasses, and will be live streamed from Maryland Hall in Annapolis, Maryland, between 11 a.m. and 4:30 p.m. each day of the event. This is a live event, live streamed to anyone with a phone, tablet or computer, so you have the opportunity to ask questions via the web chat to the teachers. Registrants also have a chance to win a brand new PRS guitar each and every day of the event. On top of that, the entire event will be available once the camp is concluded in a condensed format to those who have registered, so you won't miss out if you're unavailable for part of the schedule or have to take a break. Visit MarylandHallMusicSchool.com or follow links in the description of this podcast. Hello and welcome to the Friday Special, a podcast by Guitar Nerds. In this series, in each episode, I'll have a new guest from the world of guitars, amplification, and effects pedals. We'll have brands, producers, musicians, and everything in between. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by my co-host, Matt Knight.
Good evening.
And our special guest, YouTube sensation and all-around wonderful chap, Tyler Larson of Music Is Win. Hello, Tyler, and welcome to the show.
You say good evening, I say good afternoon.
Well, it is afternoon for you, and it is evening for us, that is true.
It's good evening somewhere.
And evening, morning, whatever time it is, I'm glad to be here.
It's wonderful. 2 in the afternoon for you, 8 for us, which means I am halfway through a 12-year-old bottle of Chivas Regal, so wonderful. And for listeners, if you're not familiar with Tyler and his brand, Music Is Win, Tyler runs an incredibly successful YouTube channel and online guitar tuition course. His YouTube alone has amassed over 1 million subscribers, where he offers free lessons in technique, hints and tips, demos, reviews, but also has a whole bunch of other stuff. And in fact, Tyler used to put out a video every single day on YouTube, so the level of content he produces is outstanding. You've allowed yourself to calm down a little bit now, though, right?
Yeah, that was that was a time in my life, and that time is over. I was kind of discovering my voice, if you will, and look back at some of those videos and like, but I don't regret any of them because they led me to this place podcast with you.
Yeah, exactly. This is the culmination of everything you've worked towards is right here at this moment. But yeah, I mean, Sorry, go on, Matt.
I was going to say, just in preparation for this podcast, I was on your channel. I was saying to Joe, and I was like, I wonder what Tyler's most popular videos are. And the most popular video on the channel has me and you in the thumbnail.
Yeah, I was gonna say you are like an extremely important part of my channel, Matt, whether you realize it or not.
Matt is the face of Music Is Win.
Exactly, he is. He's probably the first thing a lot of people see when they when they are checking out YouTube and see my stuff. It's quite glorious. I'm very happy that's true.
I think recently my parents bought a new flashy TV after years of hounding them, and they got one with YouTube built in. So I told my dad how to use it, and he sent me a picture about 2 months ago, being like, "I'm on YouTube and I found a picture of you," and it was that video.
Yeah, you know, sometimes, and I'm sure you guys are familiar, when you're creating a piece of content and specifically for YouTube, and you come up with the title or the thumbnail, and you're just like, oh yeah, this is gonna hit. And when I saw us standing there together, Matt, that was just the feeling that anybody who hasn't seen it, the four guitar players who haven't seen this video yet in the world, it's called Playing the Forbidden Riff in a Huge Guitar Store. And that guitar store is actually Summer Nam last year.
Yeah.
And it's actually the first video I made when I moved here. So it was a very good omen.
Oh, there you go. 15 million views that video's had. That's pretty much all the guitarists.
Yeah, I think it is.
But yes, it must have been exhausting, like doing a video a day anyway. So I bet you're very glad to be through that. And I guess that must have, you know, when you talk about finding your voice, that must have meant that you know, and as you say, you produced some videos that you were like, oh, but you know. I guess, how do you manage like a quality bar when you've got to make a video every 24 hours? Plus the editing time involved in that. Your entire life must have, you know, I don't know how you found time to, you know, as we'll move on to, I guess now, I don't know how you found the time to run like musiciswin.com and develop the guitar super system well.
It wasn't. So one thing that I'll kind of peel back the curtain, I didn't film a video and edit a video every day. I built up to having a queue, if it makes sense. Like, I would have 7 to 10 videos ready to go. So if I got sick or I had to take a break or something, I had that lineup ready to pull from. But I would try and film and edit as much as possible to keep that stash of videos ready to go. But that was sort of the strategy behind it. And eventually I would experiment with only posting certain times, but a lot of it was like this weird mentality where you're like, oh, if I'm not posting something or engaging with some social media, then I'm not working. And, you know, it's like this disease that I think we can all relate to.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I understand that completely. And you know, your videos, for any listeners who haven't checked them out, as I mentioned earlier, the videos are kind of, you make like funny skits and stuff like that. You're very good at like satirical content, like poking fun at the guitar community and the sort of the ridiculousness of it. But you also, you know, you will also do reviews and demos, and there's a massive amount of like free lessons that you also include, and really interesting, unique lessons that you include on your YouTube alongside running your own actual sort of paid courses as well. And
right.
I guess
it's like a subscription system is the paid thing. So it's sort of like Netflix for guitar players now. I used to sell courses, and now it's all in one.
Yeah.
I just make stuff that I want to watch, and that's sort of the lens that I look through when I'm coming up with things, whether that involves gear features or looking at legendary songs or guitar players or just something that's completely ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, one of the things you did recently was to take apart Steve Vai's, well, I don't know how recent it was now, actually, probably a little while ago, take apart Steve Vai's new technique.
Joint shifting. Yeah. That was, my hand still hurts. It was, it was a weird thing. Like, I haven't had the feeling of hearing something and getting excited to pick up my guitar probably since I was 15. And when I heard that reinvigorated that feeling. And, you know, I like I heard Eddie Van Halen tapping and I was like, I got to try that. And I hadn't had that feeling again since until seeing that song, Candle Power by Steve Vai.
Yeah. And I think it was kind of amazing to see him out of like his comfort zone in some ways. You know, he'd sort of like put some challenges around that. And it was, you know, I'm a massive Steve Vai fan because, you know, I sort of, you know, with everyone, when you get to learn to play guitar, you kind of discover Steve Vai. But I'm a massive Frank Zappa fan, and all of the stuff that he did on that. And it was kind of cool to see him still doing something different, just like the first time you hear Passion and Warfare and you're like, what is this unbelievable guitar playing?
Yeah. Have you ever tried to read the Black Page, Matt?
No, I...
Wait, what is the Black Page?
If you have to ask, you'll never know.
Oh, God.
It was a piece of music written by Frank Zappa that is basically... It's, you know, cheap traditional sheet music, but it's just so complex that it basically just looks like a black page because there's so many notes and...
It was written for like drums and melodic percussion. So it's and then it's been like rearranged and has all these different iterations of it and new age versions, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, it's unbelievable.
I cannot read music at all.
I don't think anyone could read that. I think that was the point of it.
But I guess we should probably talk a bit about, because this is one thing I've kind of, you know, I'm keen to know, because obviously before the YouTube thing, obviously you went to Berkeley, right? Is that where you went? Yeah. So what was your sort of guitar journey before the whole YouTube thing?
Well, at Berkeley, it was fun because my concentration was performance. So I basically had to, it was all things guitar. So I played in different labs. They called them labs. So you would go into different labs. Like there was an effects pedals lab.
Wow, that where, sounds like
it would be right up your alley. And there was a guitar pedal board in the middle of the room, and it was the size of, like, imagine the biggest working functional pedal board you've seen, like, on a stage, and there was like four of those in the middle of the room. And this was really kind of before I was a gearhead, so I kind of regret not taking more advantage of that class, but that was where I learned to practice using delay, like dotted eighth note delay, to keep myself in time when you don't have a metronome or something like that. That's where I learned that trick. And then there was just a whole host of other awesome just experimentation. So that was probably like the height of the fun that I had. But then there were also classes like traditional harmony and counterpoint that examined classical composition and restricted you in certain ways when you had to compose music, or else you would get a bad grade if you wrote like parallel fourth intervals. So it ran the whole gamut of music, but it definitely shaped my guitar playing, I think, for the better. I think I could say that, you know.
Yeah. I'm sure, no doubt, like that sort of level of study. And is that where the super system came then? Was that when you decided to write your own course after sort of doing that, or did that sort of come much later?
So Guitar Super System is based on the Berkeley curriculum loosely. Like I use that as the framework, but obviously I have, the cool thing about education is you can, especially in music, is you can kind of be subjective in the way that you deliver the information. So the framework, which is sort of undeniable, includes basic harmony and ear training and things of that nature, like the modes and all the things that you should learn. But then the way you learn them, in which order you learn them, I think is what makes the teacher great. And I had a lot of teachers, so I was able to kind of learn how to teach, if that makes sense. Not on purpose, but to answer your question, I came up with Guitar Super System when I was working in a golf pro shop, hating my life. And I was like,
what?
I was like, this can't be it. this can't be all there is. And nothing, there's, you know, not knocking anyone who works in a golf pro shop, but like at that stage in my life, I had played in a band and it didn't work out, had to get a day job. And I was like, I know there's something that I can do. I must try and teach the guitar. That's like the logical next step. If you can't do, teach, right? So
yeah. That's it.
I took that route and eventually designed the first iteration of Guitar Super System. And that's honestly what led me to social media, because
wow.
I killed myself filming and creating this course. And then I was like, all right, now everybody buy it. And nobody knew who I was, lo and behold. So yeah. I had to find out how to use social media to reach people.
I didn't realize it had happened in that order, to be honest. A lot of YouTubers, it kind of happens the other way around. You know, they start being, in the guitar world, certainly, they start being sort of successful for doing whatever with a guitar on YouTube and then introduce their own teaching courses afterwards. I didn't realize for you that it'd come, you know, the opposite way around.
Yeah, I was totally fueled by making a career, like a business. I didn't know YouTube would be an option to have a career. I don't think it even was at the point when I started.
Well, I guess how many years ago was your, how old is your YouTube channel?
Well, I think I posted my first video in January 2016.
Right.
So by that point, I think YouTube was a sustainable income for creators, but I didn't consider it to be, like, I'd never used it that way. I only used it as a marketing vessel for my guitar platform. But I'm glad it kind of evolved the way it did, because now it's like a, you know, a double-edged sword with YouTube and the private instruction.
Yeah, I bet.
You haven't really been on YouTube as some of your sort of other counterparts with similar subscribers. I know some people have been on there sort of 10 years plus. So I guess, yeah, I had no idea. January 2016 doesn't seem like that long ago.
It definitely, in the grand scheme, it's not very long, but it feels long when you're uploading a video a day. Feels like forever ago.
Go on, man.
Sorry, Joe. I was going to say, you've sort of hit a million subs pretty quick. I mean, I'm sure I remember when I sort of first stumbled on your channel, maybe 100 or 200,000. A million seems to have escalated out of thin air almost. Yeah. It's sort of suddenly happened.
It is relatively recent, but I think it sort of goes in ebbs and flows. You know, you make a crazy popular video and there's a huge, I don't know, what is the good one, an ebb or a flow?
Oh, that's an interesting question.
I've had ebbs for good videos and I've had flows for bad videos, or sustained periods of mediocrity has right. been flowing, and then every now and then there's an ebb. So yeah, I guess nice. Those ebbs just get bigger and bigger as you accumulate more viewership. Yeah.
That makes sense. But of course, this month, you know, thanks to all of this, you get to be involved in this big PRS live streaming guitar workshop. We should talk a bit about that, because that's actually going to be something that you're going to, I suppose, the first time you're leaving the house in a while, or, you know, this certainly the first time you're traveling in a while, and you're going to be part of this big virtual guitar event.
Right. It's pretty exciting. I'm just excited to be around musicians. And I don't know about you guys, like, just like Matt said before we started recording, there not being a NAMM show, I didn't realize, because we're really good at complaining about NAMM, but when you take it away, you're like, oh, there's a hole in me. So yeah. I'm just like, I was really disappointed. And so this is, you know, some slight reprieve. I'm going to be hanging out with Tim Pierce and Dennis Chambers and Paul Reed Smith and the Granger Brothers and Brian Ewald and all these really awesome people who are amazing at what they do. And it's a 4-day online experience, and people can stream the content live. We're going to be one after the other giving clinics, just like you would at a summer camp in person, but everybody's going to be in their homes across the world.
Well,
and
that's the really cool thing, the fact that that's going to be available worldwide, you know, because it's live stream rather than just in sort of the area that the, you know, the event is taking place. And you don't just have to watch it live, right? You can also, you can dip in and out and watch it later as long as you, you paid for admission.
Exactly. Yeah. You can register, as long as you register, you can see all of it, whenever it's convenient for you. So that was, a pretty critical piece, I think, to make it worth people's $100 to. It's basically, I think Paul said it comes out to $5 an hour if you average it out over 4 days. So that's a pretty good deal when guitar lessons in person are like $50 an hour, I think.
Yeah. But yeah, and you get some great teachers, you know, like you as well, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, and you can like chat and. And there's Q&A, and they're giving guitars away every day. And I'm really pumped. This is the first time we're doing it like this. And I remember buying a PRS guitar, my first PRS guitar when I was in college. I saved up all my money for the entire summer working in the faculty computer lab and solving. This was back when like there were migration issues between like iCal on your Mac and your iPhone had a different iCal, and there would be all these massive problems, and these teachers would come in not knowing what the hell is going on and be like, fix it. I got all my lesson appointments. And these are like, these are like legendary guitar players and bass players and drummers who would just come in, and I would be the one who's like the man, you know? So it was a weird role reversal working in that job. Like Joe Stump would come in, and he'd be like, yo, man, I can't sync up my contacts. I got a new phone and I got like my contacts from 2003 in here. I don't know what's going on. And I'm like, well, you can sweep pick really fast. So I don't know. So, yeah, like anyway, the story goes, I worked that job and saved up as much money as I could. And I saw my green PRS guitar that I play now and. Is kind of like part of my brand, I think. And
that was like a first PRS that you bought,
right? Yeah. So I didn't really, again, I wasn't really a gearhead. I liked the way it felt. I picked it up. I mean, I had played PRS guitars once or twice before, but like that was the first one that I bought with my own money. And so anyway, the guitar that I like worshipped and basically learned to be a good guitar player on, now I'm working with the dude who built it, which I never really thought would happen, and that was only like, you know, 10 years ago.
Well, yeah, like that. Let's talk about that for a bit. I want to talk all about the green PRS and just the fact that you didn't buy an SE as your first guitar, you went straight in. But let's talk a bit about your relationship with Paul Reed Smith, because you've done, you know, you've done countless videos with him now, and you're so kind of embedded as part of the PRS brand. You know, how did that happen?
Well, I guess it's kind of goes back to the way I kind of think about everything from a business perspective. Like, I partially started my channel with the thought that I would be the only guy with a green PRS. And so I like really tried to focus on the cinematic aspect of having sexy looking guitar shots in my videos, and the way I would present these things would be kind of more like watching a movie. And the PRS, I just feel like everyone was always Fender or Gibson, you know, when I look on YouTube, or just a guitar that isn't necessarily memorable. So that factored in a lot. And as a result, you know, that paired with the fact that I really am just comfortable on PRS necks. I think guitar players aren't really guitar players. They're guitar neck players. So I think that how the neck feels in your hand is really what allows you to distinguish yourself on one instrument to the next, and what, you know, gives you your proclivities towards certain instruments. And I think, you know, I just got fanboyed into the brand, and I reached out to them as soon as I had any sort of notoriety, which was like way too soon, obviously. Like, you think 10,000 subscribers is, well, I have 10,000 subscribers, and I think it's time for you and I to sit down and have the artist conversation. But yeah, I mean, I just reached out to them, and people don't know, but PRS isn't like a huge corporation. They're just this small company of a few hundred employees. And I mean, I might actually be wrong on that, but they're not big compared to the other guitar brands. At least the employees that I know, there's like a handful. There's like a dozen of people who are like are in the highest echelon who make the decisions. And it's really kind of more family style.
Right.
Which is cool. And I think that's why they were receptive to the whole social media thing earlier than later. Like, I got in touch with them first in 2016.
Right.
And I did a clinic at this place called Island Music in Maryland, which is where PRS is based. And it sort of grew from there. They sent me an S2. I don't think SEs were out yet, but right. They sent me an S2 to do the clinic. And that in itself was like, whoa, you're giving me a guitar? Yeah, they've just always been really, really supportive and open-minded, which is, I think, really hard. You know, now companies get social media, but back in 2016, it was still like, get out of here. You just like put your iPhone up and record stuff in your bedroom.
You're right. It was definitely only the progressive companies that were really sort of, you know, understanding the importance of social media back then.
So it was serendipitous in that way.
Yeah, great that PRS were like that. And of course, you know, Paul himself obviously was so receptive because, as I say, you've done a number of videos with him now, and certainly he's made himself quite, you know, quite prominent on social media whenever he kind of can be as a real figurehead for the company, which isn't often something you see from sort of a large brand, someone right at the top, you know, being in the limelight in a really positive way whenever possible.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine someone like him being just like kind of my pal now, because he sort of is like the living Leo Fender the way I consider him. And, you know, when you talk guitar with him, you kind of forget who you're talking to sometimes. And I'm just like having it, 'cause I have to talk to him a lot. Not have to, I get to talk to him a lot for the camp and, you know, just off the cuff stuff. And then I kind of forget I'm talking to Paul about this, that, and the other thing. And we start talking about pickups, and all of a sudden I'm getting an education. So yeah, he's a really, really nice person, really humble.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So when is the PRS Tyler Larson, you know, is there a PRS Tyler Larson that we can,
you know, expect? You know, man, if there is, you're going to get a lot of cryptic posts on social media several months beforehand.
Right. Okay. Right.
But I'll tell you, I am an artist. That's a newer development. I'm on their artist roster.
Right.
So cool. I think I'm making the stepping stones up to be hanging out with John Mayer and Carlos Santana.
That's what you want. So let's talk about your green PRS. What exactly is it?
It's an SC-245, and I believe it was built in 2008. But I believe it was pre-Gibson lawsuit, which, you know, I don't know if anyone knows about that, PRS won.
Educate the listeners.
Yeah, so Gibson sued PRS. I don't even actually know the details, so I could be wrong. But as far as I remember, PRS was sued by Gibson because the SC-245 was too similar to the Les Paul. And that's all I can remember. All I know, the outcome is PRS won the lawsuit in that they weren't copying Gibson. So
That's right. Yeah.
Anyway, this guitar is of that era, and now they make single cuts just like it. They make an SE 245 too now. And I have a cut. I have another single cut too. It's a McCarty 594 single cut, semi hollow. But anyway, yeah, that guitar has had Gorilla Glue whipped on it by a fidget spinner. back in the once a day upload days, Matt, that you brought up, I was out of video ideas, and this is right when fidget spinners started to become popular. And so I super glued guitar picks to a fidget spinner, and I spun it, and I just played stupid stuff for like 3 minutes, and it sprayed glue all over my guitar. And I eventually got Philip McKnight to re up the guitar, kind of give it a once over. He calls it sharpen my axe. I got him to basically bring it back from the dead. He got the Gorilla Glue off and replaced some other parts of the guitar. But yeah, another weird thing, like that video got like 5 million views, and I made it in like 12 minutes. And so it had like a war scar, the Gorilla Glue. And I don't know. The neck just fits in my hand. It just comes back to the neck for me.
Yeah.
I see. Yeah.
And when you actually bought it then, was that the sort of, was it try a bunch and then that was the one that just worked, or was that the first one?
Yeah, that was it. I have a sort of an incriminating story I can tell that happened to me in college.
But incriminate away.
Yeah. Okay. So I was short on cash because I was a college kid, right?
Oh, wait. Okay. Where is this going?
No. What is this podcast rated? No. I'll keep it PG-13. So basically, I was going to meet some friends, and I went, and it was pretty late at night, and I was hanging out at my friend's house, and we left to go to somebody else's house, and then everyone else left. So it's like 2 a.m. right now, and I come back to my car, and I realize my keys are locked in my car, and this is before iPhones. And I'm like, what am I going to do? But I did have, I think smartphones were just becoming things. So I had a flip phone that was a smartphone. So I found the number of a locksmith on this like super slow internet. And the guy came out to open my car and he said, I can get it open, but blah, 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 blah. Gonna need a down payment of blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, all right, I'll just use this credit card that I have no idea what the limit is. And so he gets the car open with this definitely not by code method of like using some sort of balloon to creak open the door, like kind of wedge it open. And he used a plier thing to reach down like a clothes hanger, open the car. And so I'm good to go. I got the car open and he's like, all right, that's gonna be $400. And I'm like, okay, I got a credit card here. Can we just like, do you have some way you can take this? He's like, no, it's gotta be cash. And I'm like, oh, and this is a huge dude and it's 2 a.m. and he's asked for cash. And I'm like, oh no. So he's like, you gotta give me something, man. I need collateral and you better give me your phone number. And I'm like, I don't have collateral. I have these microphone stands. They're worth like $80 each. And he believed that these microphone stands in my car were worth. There was a lot of them, to be fair. I was keeping my band's gear for like our band practices. Like we kept all the gear in my car. I was the only one in the car with a car because we were living in Boston. And so I gave away all my band's microphone stands, the PA gear, all this stuff. This dude just took in his white van. And I went home kind of deflated. And I told my band, I was like, I got to get $400 somehow. And the credit card won't work. And I could have maybe asked my parents, but I didn't want to do that. So what I did was I sold my guitar at the time, which was a Fender Thinline semi-hollow made in Mexico. So I think I sold it for like $600 on eBay. And I was going to borrow my friend's guitar until I could get a new guitar.
Oh my God, this is awful.
Yeah, so... And this is in Berkeley. Like, I need a guitar, you know? So I sell the guitar on eBay, and I did not do a good job packing it. I'll just kind of do a little foreshadowing there. Oh. So I ship the guitar off. The money gets into my account. I get the money to pay the locksmith. I get all our gear back. And I have an extra $100, so I go buy some beer and other fun stuff. So... I'm feeling like, okay, it's going to be okay. It sucks that I lost my guitar, but I'll save up more and work. And that was just a terrible experience.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So a few days later, I get a message from the person who bought the guitar, and he's like, and the message is like, "This neck is cracked in half. I want my money back, man. Who packed this? An idiot?" And so what happened was, back then eBay had a policy where if you didn't contact the seller within 3 days of receiving your item, the warranty protection was off. Like, anything that happened after that was on you.
Yeah.
So basically the guitar sat on his porch for 4 days. Luckily for me, he was out of town or something and didn't open the guitar until after that window. And so basically he got totally screwed, and I have no way to ever know who he is, but I'm sorry, person. I did not give him his money back because I had no money to give him. And if I could, I would give it back to him now. I've actually gone back in my eBay history, and his username is no longer active. So I've even tried to make things right 10 years later. But yeah, that's my story. So I eventually had to earn money, and I just kept earning money, and I bought that PRS that we were talking about.
That is a harrowing story.
Yeah, it's a strange tale.
Yeah. But okay, so since then you've successfully obviously expanded your guitar collection quite substantially. I'd love to hear about, you know, what your favorite bits are in your current guitar collection now that you're, you know, a full gearhead and able to sort of collect the guitars that you actually want, rather than, you know, having to sell them to sort of dodgy, muscly locksmiths.
I hope I never have to. Well, I don't know about you guys. I will never sell any gear. So I only accumulate at this point.
Yeah, I've got a bad habit of that as well.
I'm a fiend. Like, maybe eventually I'll trade stuff, but like, I don't know. I have a weird thing now where I'll never, maybe it was because of what happened to me, I'll just never sell stuff.
The problem with selling stuff is every time you sell something, even if you're buying something else that you really like, you will eventually regret selling that thing. At some point, your tastes will
get
full circle. No. And Matt, you should know that.
I know. I've done it many times and regretted it many times.
Especially with that Esquire, you know.
Yeah.
I can't handle the regret. I can't put myself in that position. But I would say... my favorite guitars, I mean, to go outside the PR, like the PRS.
Yeah, let's hear about the other things, because, you know, exciting things that I've seen. You've got like a, I don't know if it's yours or if it was borrowed or anything, but the one that excited me was that sparkly, sort of sparkly pink, almost sparkly burgundy Miss Strat.
Oh yeah, that is a 10S guitar. You know, so they.
I don't know. Tell me about them.
I feel like they. They're I believe they're. I don't want to say what country. They're somewhere overseas, but they reached out to me. They're another example of companies kind of getting it. So it's a relatively inexpensive guitar, I think. I would say like $500, but they reached out to me and they're like, hey, we have these really great quality parts. Like, it's a roasted maple neck and the pickups are actually unbelievably good sounding. But the guitar itself is inexpensive. So I would encourage people to check out 10S if they're looking for a really good quality guitar. And they make all different sorts, like Strat style, Gibson style, or I should say Les Paul style. They really just kind of are bootstrapped and trying to make a name for making quality instruments.
They make a 14 string as well.
Yeah. They're a Beijing sort of custom shop. So
we're seeing
great stuff come out of Beijing at the moment. Like, obviously, for guitar nerds, for us here, we're big fans of Eastman. You know, they're a fantastic, wonderful Beijing custom shop. But yeah, this stuff all looks fantastic, Tyler. These are some cool guitars.
Yeah, it's really good, and they're really really enthusiastic about building anything you wanted. So I've always been, you know, I'm really lucky that I get to do stuff like that. Like another really cool one that I like is my Gibson 335, and I got that guitar when I went to the Gibson factory in Nashville, and it was
You got it from Nashville, but it's a 335. Yeah. Aren't they Memphis?
Yeah, I guess maybe they shipped it there. I don't know if it came from the factory, but the reason I got it is because I went to the Nashville factory and played guitar. So I set up an amp and I got a Firebird and my pedal board, and I cranked the amp up and just shredded as hard as I could for like 10 minutes. And this is while production was going, like, in the background, there's all these people building guitars and in the conveyor belts are going and everything. And if people want to look up that, it's called Shredding in the Gibson Factory or something along those lines. But they awarded me the Blueberry Burst for my efforts. And So I really like guitars that are tied to experiences. I'm looking at my wall right now. Like the blue S2, the PRS S2, it's a custom 24. That was kind of, you know, my initiation, if you will, into being accepted as, you know, a content creator. Let's see what else is up there. There's a JP15 7 string up there. I got that from
I was gonna say you do quite a lot of stuff with Music Man as well. They're a company that you seem to you know, be quite involved with, and they're a company that we love as well. We love everything that they do.
Yeah, they're super nice. They're like, Robert is one of my favorite people to deal with. He's just like, hey, need this thing? And I'm like, I need this thing and this thing. I can make this. And he's like, all right, cool. Well, here's the shipping number. And I'm like, yeah. But I think the key with that is to not ask too much, like, all the time. But anyway, the JP15 is just a glorious, amazing instrument. I really like Ernie Ball because, you know, obviously the artists on their roster, like, John Petrucci is one of my favorite guitar players, and their guitars must be good if he plays them, right?
Yeah.
Is that what the old artist endorsement thing means?
Exactly that. I am a much bigger fan of the JP than I am the Majesty, however.
Me too. Yeah.
I have to say, like, having played a Majesty, I was like, oh, it's fantastic. I think I just don't like the look of it. But having played one, I was like, this is incredible. And we had one for a while, and it was very, very. Even Mark Packham, who one of our other hosts, is the most traditionally minded Les Paul Junior's only fella. Even he likes the sort of bright purple majesty that we had. It certainly is a wonderful player, but the JP is just very timeless, and I like that. It's like, it's very modern come retro. Like it does both. Both things very well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the another sentimental one, last one I'll mention, is my Fender Strat. It's a Texas Special, it has Texas Special pickups, and it's just a natural finish, and it's got the big old 70s fat headstock, and I'm a Strat guy. I'm not, sure. Like, it's Tele guy versus Strat guy. I'm a Strat preferential treatment giver.
Do you actually own any Tellys then, or do you
I have one that is a Paoletti, which is an Italian guitar builder, and that guitar is made out of 400 year old wine barrels. So
that sounds wonderful.
It's delightful, and I think the Music Man, the James Valentine, is based on a Telly. I could be wrong, but
it's half a Telly, half a 335.
Yeah, so that one kind of plays like a Telly for me.
Yeah,
doesn't sound like one, but I'm into the Tellys too, but for some reason I feel more at home on a Strat style than a Telly style.
Sure. Yes. Yeah. Well. Yeah. We all the guitar notes hosts recently went through a bit of a Strat stage, didn't we? Sort of. I think I started it, Matt. But yeah,
I've had mine for ages, but I've been in love with my James Valentine since I got it. It's, to me, it's the, the highlight. I wouldn't say the highlight of collection in terms of like cool factor, maybe. But just in terms of playability, that's the one I always go to.
Well, do you guys have any vintage guitars?
Oh yeah, I have quite a few, but only because I also run it depends what you class as vintage. I also own a vintage Japanese guitar shop, so I have lots of 70s and 80s Japanese lawsuit era guitars.
Oh, that's
in
sick.
In this room with me. I'm sort of, I podcast surrounded by maybe 40 guitars at any given time, which is lovely, but. But yeah, I used to have 4 Strats, and I sold them all last year, and I'm still reeling from doing that. I think it was a terrible thing to do, and I've got one 50s reissue Japanese Strat left that's for sale. Obviously, I hope it doesn't sell.
Look, just stop selling guitars. I don't know. I can't make it any clearer. You're gonna hurt yourself, and it's not worth it.
Yeah, of course. And Matt, you have what year is your Strat? 88. 88. A Paisley. Lovely Paisley.
Japan Paisley. I love that thing, but it was pink. So for me, it was just like, well, it's pink, so it's good enough for me. But
you like the pink.
Oh, yeah.
We love the pink. That's the official color of guitar nets.
I've seen that. I've been tracking that.
Yeah, yeah.
Next goal is to do a, is to go, I want to contact one of the stores here in Nashville, maybe Rumble Seat Music or Carter Vintage, and I want to document the process of buying my first vintage guitar.
I was about to ask, so you don't own any vintage guitars, Tyler?
No, but I'm finally to a point where I can justify getting a rather good one.
Oh, I'm excited. Oh, no, you're going to get a good one, mate. I'm telling you.
I mean is expensive. I can finally justify the expense of getting one that's worth paying for.
The thing with vintage guitars is that the busted ones, the cheap ones, the ones that have been gigged and played and have got all the knocks and scars and damage and twisted neck and dodgy microphonic pickups. Those are the ones you want. That's where I'm at.
Is that right? Okay.
Well, that's all I care about are bad vintage guitars, cheap vintage guitars. So, I'm saying Those ones, you'd be surprised how much you don't have to play well if you're playing a beat up old guitar, because it's like it's all about the tone. It's all about the fact that the incredibly biting treble response on an old 60s harmony, like everyone's all about, oh, the tone's lovely, and the fact that you're playing it sloppily just goes out the window. No one minds that you're playing it sloppily because that's an old 60s harmony. Try and do that on a 60s Strat. You're expected to be perfect, you know? I'm just...
Okay. This is important wisdom that I didn't know I needed.
And you're probably in, like, one of the best places in America for, like, vintage guitars, right? Like,
I could be in the best place on Earth. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. Almost definitely in the best place on Earth.
I mean, Carter's is amazing. I think, is it Groon Guitars is there as well? Isn't he, like... He's got, like, a crazy collection and... I mean, last time I went to Carter's, it was just like, wow, it's a bit of everything here.
Yep. Yeah. I think I'll either go there or Rumble Seat Music, which is sort of a hidden gem. It looks like a gas station when you pull up outside it, but then you walk in and it blooms into this glorious, amazing den of vintage goodness.
Wow. I think the one thing I always... I think we don't really have it in the UK, and... It's something that I always, every time I go to America, I'm like, oh, we need to go to one. It's like pawn shops, because we don't really have that in the UK, not at the same way that you kind of have thrift stores and stuff
like
that.
We've got cash converters, Matt.
We've got cash converters, which is generally terrible.
Cash for gold, cash for gold.
Yes. Yeah, it's cash converters is like a poor thrift store in the sense that everything is just like... It's kind of where like
golf clubs and
bad PA systems.
Yeah.
It's not
PV.
Kind of like...
PV is the only brand that you'll see in those ones.
Yeah.
Don't forget about Yamaha.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Nashville is kind of. I mean, yeah, and obviously the musicians. That I mean, you know, I'm sure being a Nashville local, you don't really spend all of your time. On the strip, most people I've met from Nashville are like, I never go there. But as a tourist, just some of the level of musicianship in that whole city is just unreal.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really go that much, but I do go to the kind of, I have a couple spots, because the thing about the strip is it's all rooftop bars. So you don't necessarily have to be in the country pits of the honky tonks to have a good time on the strip. Like, you can go up on the rooftops, and if it's a beautiful night, you're looking out at the river and having a drink on a rooftop. So it's a really good place to bring people who come visit you. So I'm glad for that option. And then obviously we have our own neighborhoods that we like to go to as well.
Yeah,
I bet. Now, I want to talk outside of guitars.
Sure.
I'd love to talk about, I guess amplification as well for you and what you use. I guess, you know, because of course you also, you know, perform music yourself. So there's got to be like a live setup, a setup for home recording, and then whether or not when you're trying stuff out yourself at home, you have a different setup for that. As well as, you know, creating YouTube videos.
Yeah, it sort of depends on what style the content calls for. If I'm going for speed, then the plug-in amplification that I go to is Universal Audio. So I have a really good relationship with those guys, and I pretty much exclusively use their plugins. Not because I have to, but it just sounds so good. Like the Diesel VH4 plugin,
right?
For heavy stuff and a clean pedal platform is probably my go-to. And then I use the aux for any attenuation or cab simulation that I would like to do. And then as far as live, I will use my PRS Custom 50, which is... I don't believe they make that one anymore, but it's sort of akin to like a less bassy J-Mod.
Right.
With a little bit bitier gain sound. I also love the Victory Copper Sound Deluxe, Copper Deluxe.
Oh yeah, lovely.
I just got that one in the studio recently and it's awesome. It's got a really amazing spring reverb and just a nice creamy gain channel.
Yeah, they're great. Matt, did you have one of those for a bit?
No. I've at the Victory amps, I don't actually own them. We've got them in the office that we've used with bits of kit, but we've got a V30, which is great. And the BD1, which is their little 30-watt, just three-controlled amp, which is wicked. But actually, I think the Coppers, they're like AC31, which is definitely the one that interests me. That looks cool.
Yeah, it is. Now you say that, I guess it is kind of like that. I think it's a little bit more. Something about the AC30 is a little difficult for me to play, if that makes sense. Like, there's something about the tone of it that doesn't really mesh with my style. And I feel like the Copper has a sort of rounder top end than an AC30. It's not quite as boxy.
I know what you mean. Yeah, there's definitely an AC30 definitely has. I guess if you were playing, you know, PRS amps before then, and I guess sort of more modern amplifiers, there is something quite something very mid pushed, honky and brash about Vox AC30s, which I absolutely love. But I think it takes kind of growing up with that amplifier to know how to harness it rather than just sort of plugging straight into it. I don't think it's a great flat amplifier, you know, like a lot of the other things will be. And the Cop is probably an excellent modern iteration of that that kind of smooths out some of those rough edges.
And it probably has the prettiest logo.
Yeah.
It's got those leaves or whatever those are.
Yeah, exactly. So you predominantly play PRS amps as well as PRS guitars. Do you get many sort of PRS amps to try out? Like, for example, the Sonzera was the one for me that really stood out for PRS as being, like, for me that was the first time I was like, oh, this is a literally fantastic amplifier.
Yeah, I have one sitting next to me right now.
Oh, right.
It's actually I use that pretty much exclusively for clinics, because it's just such a neutral pedal platform, and it sounds awesome if my pedal board explodes. So it's got a great. I kind of judge amps based on their gain stage, like how the gain changes as you turn it up, because a clean sound is a clean sound. I think most amps can do really good clean sounds. I don't think anyone's like, well, I'd use this amp for the clean sound, and that's like a Fender or something. But most amps in this kind of modern conversation, I think, do clean well. But it's when you get to that dirty channel that I think the amps can separate themselves, and I think the Sonzera is really good for that. Like, if you wanted to go use the amp distortion and just have a boost in the effects chain or something like that, it would be perfectly viable to use it that way. But again, I think the neutral pedal platform element, I always look for that in amps too, because it's different when you plug your pedal board into, for example, like we're talking about an AC30, if you plug it into that versus like a Fender Princeton versus a Sonzera, there's three different sounds, and I feel like the PRS gives me the sound of the pedals that I am used to in the clinic environment where I need to be comfortable. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a great amp.
Yeah, that makes sense. If anything, like a PRS amplifiers are almost something we don't talk about enough on the Guitar Nerds podcast, because they have always sounded absolutely fantastic. And have been something that, you know, I think we all really liked when we were all in guitar shops.
I mean, if I could have one, I'd still have the J mod.
Really?
I mean, it's like, just.
Have you played a J mod a lot?
I have not. I have not been. Unfortunately, the last one to come out was not long after I started working at Boss. I'd finished working in stores, but. I just think it's, I mean, I'm not the world's biggest John Mayer fan, but I do really appreciate his
guitars. Wait, is the J-Mod a John Mayer thing?
Yeah, it's like
right, that's why I don't know it then.
It's his kind of signature. I think it came out the similar time as the Modern Eagle. and
you have to say backslash S, Joe.
But I think it's just like, it's just like the pinnacle, right? I mean, that was like $7,000, I think, or something, you know, $7,000 or something crazy.
So you just want the J-Mod so you can sell it and buy more stuff because you sell everything.
Yeah, that's it. No, this is definitely something that would 100% like probably never lose its value. But I'm all about single channel, super clean, and then you just let the pedal board do the work. Mask my average playing with many a boss pedal.
Well, let's talk about that.
Balance simulators.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's talk about pedal boards then. If you need such a clean pedal platform, Tyler, then your pedal board must be very important.
Yeah, I have spent the quarantine building and ripping apart and building and ripping apart pedal boards because I've never really been forced to have a pedal board that, I don't know. I'm just making a concerted effort to blend the analog and digital world. Like, I don't want to make YouTube videos for the rest of my life. So,
yeah, but that's definitely a thing for anyone who's doing the sort of things that we're all doing. Like, I know, Matt, obviously, you have a committed pedal board, but certainly for guitar, I never bother because it's going to change from week to week, depending on what we're talking about or what we've got coming through. So,
yeah. So I'm basically, I'm still the same way as you. Like, I'm going to have a pedal board that's always changing that I'm using for different videos and different contexts. But this is the pedal board that it took me these last 5 months, and I made a concerted effort to actually come up with a pedal board that I can pick up and go to any gig and have my sound. So I can, I'm looking at it right now. I can give you the rundown, and then you guys can comment on what you would be interested in hearing more about if you want.
We'll swipe left or right for each one.
Okay. Yeah? Guitar pedal Tinder. Let's go. We got we got the Polytune swipe. I'm not on Tinder, so which way do you swipe for no?
I have no idea. So which? So it's the Polytune. It's very good. Is it the Mini or just the standard?
It's the Mini 3. So it has the buffer. Three.
Oh, very
and
nice.
The true bypass.
Okay, that's good.
And then it goes into the Empress FX compressor, and that goes into the Source Audio Spectrum.
Wait, what's the Spectrum? What's the Spectrum?
That's the filter, right?
Is it?
Yes, that's the filter.
Ah.
And after that, we go into the Pigtronix Octava.
Nice.
And after that, we go into the Strymon Riverside.
Oh, overdrive. Really? That's your main drive choice, the Riverside?
Yep.
Wow.
It is.
Excellent.
And then after that, go into the Empress FX Heavy. And after that, we go into the Sabadeus Funky Vibe.
Oh, I don't know this. Matt, do you know that?
I do not. No.
I stumped the pedal nerds, the guitar nerds.
I think you just made it up. It's probably not real.
I went into the table glass speaker tube.
All right, I'll tell you about that one. Let me finish. I got two left. It goes into the JHS Lucky Cat delay and into the Walrus Effects Walrus Audio Effects Fathom Reverb.
Oh, very nice.
And I also have a Boss RC1 loop station. So, and that's like the clinic board. That's
right.
That's my thing for sounding.
That's what you're
going to
be using as Tyler, you didn't point out to me, but Maryland, as I'm supposed to be saying, I said Maryland.
I loved the way you said it. I wasn't going to make you re-record it. You were like, Maryland.
it's been brought up by all our American listeners.
Well, here's the thing. I think it made it more pronounced and made it stick in people's heads. So I thought it was brilliant.
Right. Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, there you go, listeners. It was Tyler's fault because he didn't tell me. But yes, it has certainly been brought up. It is, everyone's commenting on it on the group, the fact that I...
said Maryland. It's Maryland. Whatever. It's, you know, we say different words different ways sometimes.
There you go.
But anyway, the Sabadeus Funky Vibe is, it was built by a person who I reached out to because I saw a demo of it by RJ Ronquillo. I don't know if you know who he is.
Yeah, he's a Nashville.
Yeah, he's in Nashville well, right? Also. I saw it on his Instagram and I was like, yo, I need that. So as it is, you know, with this YouTube thing, some of the perks are, hey, can I have this pedal? I'll use it. And then the guy was like, all right, well, they're all handmade. It'll take 6 weeks. And I was like, great. But basically what it does is it imbues you with the power of Jimi Hendrix.
I understand. And, yes.
So it's not a bad pedal. It's sort of like the machine gun sound.
Oh, I see.
Or like the a dialed back version of the national anthem. So it has a chorus and a vibrato switch, and it's just that late 60s vibe sound.
Yeah.
And it's just so good. And it takes up a lot of real estate on the pedal board. It's like two pedals worth. So it's definitely, like, you can tell my obsession with it to have it on clinic board.
I honestly find Univibe the hardest one to get right. But when you dial it in, it is possibly one of the best sounding modulations out there.
Exactly. Yeah, it's just one, like, I put the compressor on and I put it on and it's just the sound. And then I'll pump on the Strymon on a low gain with the mid push, the gain's at about 9 o'clock. And it just is like that thing where you can just play it for hours and hours and just play the same licks too, over and over. And it's just like, yes, I am Hendrix. Yes. And it's just so much fun. I think everyone should have a pedal on their board that when you turn it on, non-guitar players smile. And that one, when you turn it on, like, people are just like, ooh, is that Hendrix? Oh, that guy's Hendrix up there. Nice. Jeez,
that makes sense.
Not ring modulator then.
Yeah. Well, also the Spectrum does that too. I'm not like a huge fan of auto wah or filter, but this one just has like a chewy organic setting that I've dialed in, and it's another one, like, you know, when you hear a guitar player giving a clinic, they're just playing like nasty blues licks and just like nice creamy tones. But not often do you get clinicians who use effects that are noticeable to the audience.
And modulation is just never there.
Yeah, I think it's an important thing to bring to the table. So there you go.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's definitely an odd, an unusual modulation choice. You know, I would have expected, you know, Univibe and a filter being sort of your modulation go-tos, you know. I would have expected, you know, for a clinic pedal board, I guess, maybe a straight chorus and a straight phaser as a maximum for sort of modulation. So that's a really interesting choice.
You know, yeah, I went way beyond the status quo and kind of planned little segments around using them too, and I'm taking it pretty seriously. I really like teaching and, you know, clinics, just like, especially even if there's only a few people in the room, which there's going to be this time and they're all better at guitar than me. It's going to be fun to like see somebody smile when you say something cool. Yeah. I don't know. I just like that.
And, so spending that sort of time in the PRS factory, then you haven't decided to go down the route of private stock just yet then?
Well, let's just say, between you and me and all the thousands and millions of people listening to this, I am going down that hole.
Oh.
I don't know how deep it goes, but we'll find out.
I think it's one of those ones where you just sort of like you'll tour the factory and you know, it comes to the wood library and you just take that and you spec it out, and then you're like, oh, great. And then you sort of forget to ask about the price and then deliver it. And they're like, you just sort of see a row of zeros.
And you're like, yeah, oh. Yeah.
They should have stopped me.
The zeros definitely are an inhibiting factor for people. But this event has yielded a couple zeros for all parties involved, thanks to all the lovely registrants. So we'll see if I honestly care about guitars way more than money or like pretty much anything other than my wife. You know, I'm getting a dog soon, so maybe the dog will move up to number two.
Oh, that's yeah, it definitely will. Oh, I'm excited for you.
Yeah, I'm really it's a big step for us, but yeah, anyway, there's gonna be plenty of dog guitar pictures to come. So check out my Instagram maybe.
Well, there we go. Well, that pretty much brings us up to time for this week's episode of the Friday Special. So it's been absolutely wonderful having you on, Tyler. Thank you for taking the time to chat with us.
Oh, I'm glad to talk to you guys. It's been a blast. It feels like we're hanging out together. We just need to, you know, we need to somehow find a way to sip a virtual beer together.
And that's exactly what we need to do. Well, you can, of course, catch more Guitar Nerds over on Patreon at patreon.com/guitar nerds or join us on any of the major social platforms with @guitar nerds. And, you know, obviously you know who Tyler is, but get involved with Music Is Win on YouTube or any of his social platforms, including musiciswin.com, where you can sign up for $10 a month. To his incredible guitar super system. You can learn how to unlock your hidden talent. And you can, and we'll be back next week with our regular episode on Wednesday and another Friday special on Friday. We'll catch you then for more of this guitar nerdery. Farewell.